This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Welcome, everybody, to a Tuesday edition of the OBP, the Orange Bloods podcast, brought to you by the Texas Card House. Check them out, 183 and Anderson Mill, the state of Texas's premier poker club. It's a fantastic place. If you haven't played cards there yet, you need to. If you have, you know what's up. It is like being able to go to Vegas, but right here in the heart of Austin, Texas. It's legit. It's legal. You can cash out and make your money, and you can lose it too. There's a lot of ways that gambling can go, obviously, but the Texas Card House, proud partners of orangebloods.com. I speak for them. I think they're proud partners. and among the first to jump on and be involved with the Yak as well. So today's podcast comes out a day later than normal. I would like to blame the Super Bowl for the reasons of my tardiness. And the reality is, man, when I get myself stuck into doing rankings, I never want to stop. Like every time, and it's so weird because I'll get myself into this situation where I'm constantly, you know, tweaking the order by margins that really shouldn't matter, but you want the damn thing to be as perfect as it can be for something that's essentially a pseudoscience. But I'm done. On the eve of National Signing Day, the Lone Star Recruiting 2019 rankings officially D-O-N-E. That's done for those of you who don't want to spell this morning or this afternoon or whenever you might be listening to this podcast. So what I've kind of done is I've just decided to do today's podcast. It's all recruiting related. It's all rankings related. It's all big picture 2019 stuff. Given that National Signing Day is, as of the recording of this podcast, what, like 10 hours away. So, you know, I feel like a really good, healthy recruiting conversation is the way to go. And a lot of it will, I'll center a lot of the discussion on what my final rankings look like. And I'll go in order and kind of give you some thoughts on the best players in the state and kind of what I think of them, because it is a little bit easier in this fashion to be able to not worry about word count or any of these things. I can just go off on a tangent if I want to. So let's start off with some big picture stuff as we get into this kind of pre-signing day podcast of sorts. But man, the shelf life of this one should be pretty good though, because this isn't necessarily about Javon Shepherd signing with Texas tomorrow as much as it's about really and truly the big picture of what this 2019 class is. At the very top, it's as deep of a year in the state of Texas, I think, as I've seen in the time that I've been covering recruiting since 1997 is my first list. So we're two decades plus into me making lists. I've never had a year where the number of five-star guys in the state of Texas has exceeded what it is this year, which by my count, just on 24/7 and Rivals alone, probably shouldn't have said it in that order, but it's what came out as a Rivals guy. But I bring the two together for this reason. If you take the two large recruiting services together, 10 different players in the state of Texas were ranked five stars by the two largest services. That's bananas. I can't ever. I've been trying to think about it all day. I know that this has never happened before. And, you know, we've seen years when there's been as many as five or six five-star guys. But typically, those guys are, it's consensus. So you could take Rivals or 24/7 or Scout, or I guess Scout is now 24/7. I don't know. ESPN, all of them. You take all the major services. And usually if there's five or six five-star guys, and that's a wildly good year. I mean, if you've got five or six five-star guys in a year, you're talking about probably 25% of the five-star prospects nationwide. It's a big number. It's a big number. It may not be quite, you know, it depends on if it's five or six, and it depends on what the overall size of the class is, but in terms of five stars. But I think Rivals this year has 30 five-star guys, and they've got six in from the state of Texas. And I don't know, you know, I just glanced at what 24/7 did. I haven't studied it, but I looked at the top 10, looked at their five-star guys, and noticed that, you know, they've got Garrett Wilson ranked as a five-star guy, whereas Rivals has him as a just below that kind of dude. They've got Tyler Owens ranked as a five-star guy. And I said this on Orange Bloods and in a podcast, gosh, over almost 2 months ago, that I thought, I looked at Tyler Owens, I evaluated him 2 months ago, and I thought he was a five-star guy. And we'll do some more Tyler Owens discussion in a second. Before I go too deep down that rabbit hole, you've got, who are the other guys? Baylor Cup, they have rated as a five-star over at 24/7, and Rivals doesn't. But I think he's a state top 10 guy. And then, you know, who's the other guy? They've got Jeffrey Carter. And what's interesting about Jeffrey Carter is that Rivals does not think very highly of Jeffrey Carter. They've got him ranked outside the top 50. He's the number 53. He's a four-star guy. He's the number 53 guy in the state of Texas. But in terms of where like 24/7 has him ranked, they have him as a five-star guy. For the record, I have never, that is, as far as I can tell, that is the biggest discrepancy that I have ever seen from any prospect in the state of Texas. And like a set of rankings, it's just never happened before like that. I've never seen that. Interesting. Very interesting. It really is a unique situation. I've just never seen it before. Jeffrey Carter ranked as a five-star guy by 24/7, committed to Alabama. And over on the rival side, he is the number 53 prospect in the state of Texas. That's wild to me. But, you know, different strokes for different folks. It'll be fascinating to see how that pans out. We'll get to him in a second. So, like I said, from a big picture standpoint, this year in Texas, easily the deepest in terms of number of names regarded across the board as potential top 10, top 25, top 50 national prospects, a stunning number, honestly. And this happens at a time where if you're Texas, look, and we're not, this isn't, this, there are plenty, we can do a podcast later in the week where we talk about where the out-of-state kids that Texas has committed fit into what all of these things would be, right? Like Brew McCoy is a five-star kid. He's not in these rankings, but that doesn't mean that Texas isn't signing a great class and that at the top of the board, they don't have a bunch of big time guys. They do. They're the number three class in the country right now. And, but it's almost exclusively comprised of big time national out of state guys. You know, Texas might have seven out-of-state commitments that would be national or state top 25 guys. They're just not in-state. We're talking about, and this is an in-state discussion this year, and like a bunch of weird little oddities occurred in the year where Texas did the best job it's ever done in the modern history of recruiting in Texas, at Texas. Of recruiting out of state talent. And you could probably go, I can't remember A&M ever recruiting this well in any single year. You know, you could go back to like the Sir Parker year when they were really doing California well, but I don't know that they ever did a year. And you know, that was the late 90s. So I don't even know if we're talking, if you can compare apples to apples, it was a different recruiting industry, if you will, back then. I kind of call those the prehistoric recruiting years in the modern era of the Rivals ranking. So almost the last 20 years, I can't remember them ever having an out-of-state class that good. And So I think it's safe to say that in a year where Texas did the best job any program in the history of the state of Texas has ever done with out-of-state recruiting, Texas itself did the worst job it has done in the modern era of recruiting in this state ever. It is the damnedest thing ever. Texas is going to have a top three national recruiting class, and they were pretty dreadful in-state. You can't get, in my rankings, Texas has three of the top 20 prospects in the state. Now, the rise of Tyler Owens has allowed Texas to be able, on my list, to claim three of the top nine. And depending on where you have Tyler Johnson, most people have him a few. I like Tyler Johnson a lot. For me, he's almost five stars good. So I have him in the top 10. Some people like him a little bit less than that, and they've got him like four or five spots lower. But I've got Texas with three of the top nine. But if you stretch that out, they don't have anybody between 10 and 20. Technically 10 and 22. So at Mac Brown's best, Texas might have at least half of the top 22. Some years, like, half's a good number to kind of, in their true heyday, Texas was taking every other top. They would take between 7 and 8 in the top 10, and they would take, you know, 10, 12 of the top 22. They'd take like half the list. Texas this year signs three legitimate bad mothers. You know, there's just a difference between a top 10, top 15 prospect and a top 25, top 30, top 40 prospect, even if all of those guys have four-star rankings, it's different. And this was a year where Texas got three. And there's no way to spin that. I mean, I've heard it. Texas didn't want this guy, and Texas didn't want that guy, and, you know, stop. Like, Texas wanted DeMarvin Leal. He's the number one player in the state of Texas. Texas wanted Garrett Wilson. He's the number two player in the state of Texas. He's going to Ohio State. Texas wanted Kenyon Green. He's going to Texas A&M. Now, Texas didn't really go after Trajan Bridges that much. And there's a lot of reasons for that. In part, their wide receiver recruiting has been lights out. They were doing it really well in state or out of state. Clearly, Jake Smith and Brew McCoy and Marcus Washington. The list kind of goes on and on. And Trajan Bridges seemed, you know, almost from jump street to be a guy that was going to Oklahoma. But, you know, and then, you know, look, you know, Baylor Cup commits early to A&M. He's the number one tight end prospect in the state. If he hadn't committed to A&M, yeah, Texas would have been interested. You know, Theo Weiss probably falls into the Trajan Bridges conversation, and that he was such an Oklahoma lean for such a long time Oklahoma commitment, that you could say, well, Texas didn't want him, even if he plays the wide receiver position, and we know how well Texas has recruited there. I mean, he's five-star talent. Of course they wanted him. If Theo Weiss tonight, and I don't know, I haven't followed Theo Weiss so closely enough to even know if he's an early enrollee or not. It seems like most of the guys are early enrollees these days. But if at all possible, let me put it to you like this. If Theo Weiss put his name in the transfer, if he's at Oklahoma and he pulled a Brew McCoy and put his name in the portal and said, this isn't what I thought it was going to be. I don't want to be at Oklahoma anymore. I want to come to Texas. You're goddamn right, Tom Herman would find a spot for him faster than he could say the words yes. How long does it take to say the words yes? That's how it would take less time for Tom Herman to figure out a way to get Theo Weiss in the program. Like, he's a bad mother. Dude has a wallet with bad MF on it. He's overrated. Stop with that mess. He's not. He's not overrated. He's rated exactly where he needs to be. He's a bad dude. He just didn't want to go to Texas. Marcel Brooks is a guy that a lot of Texas fans will tell you, but that kid's not going to survive. And they may very well be right. I kind of feel that way about Javon Shepherd, even if they're on different, like, some guys bring baggage and some guys aren't completely formulated in a way that would allow them to succeed in an environment like at a major university. But Marcel Brooks is a five-star talent. I mean, there's no issue about that. The issue is, will he be in school in 2 or 3 years? That's a legitimate deal if you're a Texas fan and you want to say that. But, man, I thought that about Dez Bryant. It is easier to get into school than it is, than it used to be. It's harder to stay in school than it used to be. The roles flip-flopped. Used to be harder to get in, easier to stay in. Now it's easier to stay in, harder to get in. Or excuse me. Harder to stay in, easier to get in. I'm confusing myself. I apologize for that. But, you know, like, what are you going to do with him? Are you just going to ignore the talent? It's my philosophy on, it's kind of a case-by-case deal. But if you ask me today, do I think that Marcel Brooks gets into LSU? I'm going to say probably. I'm going to say probably, no matter what the, like, LSU has a way of getting dudes into school. And will he last? I mean, he's a risk. He's a risk. But he could be a first day NFL or a first or second day NFL draft prospect in 3 years. And we might all be looking back saying, man, that was silly not to rank him or regard him as a five star. Like, he just comes with baggage. If we go down the top 10 again in the state, let me do a quick thumbnail sketch of my thinking and putting the list together. It came down for me. So I have 7 guys in the state of Texas ranked as 5 stars. DeMarvin Leal, Garrett Wilson, Kenyon Green, Trajan Bridges, Jordan Whittington, Tyler Owens, Theo Weiss. Despite the fact that all those dudes are 5 stars, I felt like Leal and Wilson for me were a cut above the other guys slightly. They're like 5-star pluses. So then the conversation for me came down to, of those 2 guys, which I rate insanely high, who do I have rated above the other? And ultimately I went for Leal for, I don't know what you would call it. You know, I leaned on history to a certain degree. Big time defensive line prospects from the state of Texas that are ranked 5 stars typically end up being really good players and end up being NFL players. Like, DeMarvin Leal for me is going to be an NFL player. I think Garrett Wilson will be as well, but receivers are one of the positions in the state of Texas that has been more hit or miss than any other position in the time that I've been covering recruiting. Now, the state of Texas produces a ton of NFL receivers. What's interesting about the NFL's, like, I, you know, it's a tricky little conversation to get into because the talent pool amongst 2-stars and 3-stars is so much higher than the top of the spectrum type deals. And there's so many things that can keep a guy from making it to the NFL. But it came down to this. If I was going to bet my house, if I was going to bet something significant to me, like something that's important to my family, and I had to put it on one of these 2 guys being a first-round draft pick in 3 or 4 years, who would I lean to? And ultimately, because the wide receiver position can be so combustible, you see more players transfer from that position than almost any other position in football. I don't know. Like, it's not an indictment on Garrett Wilson. It's an indictment on the fact that he's a wide receiver. And I've been burned on wide receivers before. So I'm going defensive line with the top spot. And DeMarvin Leal has everything that an NFL, like, to me, he's slam dunk good the way Miles Garrett and Solomon Thomas were. Like, I just, you know, barring something really unfortunate happening to those guys, and whether it be injuries or grades or drugs or arrests or homesick, no, whatever. Sometimes program situation and program fit come into place. But those guys were automatics. And of course, they both went on to be first round draft picks. And I think DeMarvin Leal is exactly that kind of talent. So he took up the number one spot because I looked at every guy on the list and said to myself, if I had to bet a mortgage payment or my house itself on one of these guys being a first-round draft pick. Who am I putting my money on? And at the end of the day, DeMarvin Leal ended up being he ended up being my selection. As far as the number two guy, look, I went with Garrett Wilson. He's been number one on my list most of the year. Him being number two is not an indictment. It means I think he's a national top 10 player. He's phenomenal. His ball skills are just incredible. To me, he just feels like a guy that should be a star the moment that he steps foot on the Ohio State campus. It'll be interesting to see how he does in year one. If he makes the Jaylen Waddle type early impact, because I think the talent is there. He is just phenomenal. Number three, Kenyon Green, offensive tackle from Humble. This one's a bit of a, you know, I think in terms of the order that I put these guys, again, five-star offensive linemen from the state of Texas typically pan out really well. Kenyon Green is, I know a lot of Texas fans don't want to hear it. I know they want to point to his weaknesses and say that the weaknesses make him a bit overrated. I think if you look at his strengths, he's a five-star guy for a reason. Like, guys like him don't grow on trees. And if he doesn't get hurt, if he can avoid all these other things that we're talking about, I think Kenyon Green's playing on Sundays. So it was a big deal. And the conversation for best offensive lineman in the state, for me, centered around Kenyon Green and Tyler Johnson, the Texas commitment. There, I have them. It's funny. This will give you an idea of kind of how the rankings process works. I've got Green and Johnson side by side, with Green being given just the slightest of edges in my personal rankings at that position. So Green, I have at number three in the state, and I've got Tyler Johnson at number nine. It gives you an idea of, like, in this rankings conversation, when you're talking about all of the positions that go into the pool, you can have a very slight difference of opinion on a comparison of players, and then the margin can look more significant than it really is. I've got Kenyon Green with a five-star grade. I've got Tyler Johnson with slightly less than a five-star grade, which is how you end up one guy being third and one guy being ninth. Again, it'll be a little bit of a, you know, I don't want to repeat myself too much, but I feel like when we're talking about the top 10 guys in the state of Texas, it rarely will be talent that keeps them from, it happens. We have some guys there every year. There's going to be one or two top 10 guys that are just flat out busts. But I can't look into the future and tell you offhand who I think that's going to be. Otherwise, I wouldn't have them ranked in the top 10. Trajan Bridges, the wide receiver from Louisville Hebron, is, I've got him. There's three five-star receivers in the state of Texas this year for me: Garrett Wilson, Trajan Bridges, and Theo Weiss. Two of those dudes are going to Oklahoma. One of them's going to Ohio State. I think Bridges and Weiss and that Oklahoma offense, good God, watch out. These are the best receivers that Oklahoma has ever landed. And they got that out-of-state kid too, the Hazelwood kid. So, you know, they are loaded at the wide receiver position. And look, man, I wish I could tell you that I don't like these kids, because, you know, it's kind of an in vogue thing. Everybody seems to agree that Jaden Hazelwood is, and how Oklahoma got that kid out of Georgia, good on them. Everybody seems to agree that Hazelwood is a five-star guy. Texas fans want to quibble and argue and tell you that Trajan Bridges and Theo Weiss are overrated and they're not that good and Texas didn't want them. Well, look, man, we could have a debate as to whether or not Texas wanted them, which is different than would Texas take them or could get them. Because, again, I'm telling you right now, if Theo Weiss wanted to be a Longhorn today, you move heaven and earth to be able to make it happen. You know, you take that confirmation bias and you put it in your pocket and you make sure it goes away while you finish the deal. So I think Bridges and I think Weiss are fantastic. my other two five-star guys from the state of Texas that we haven't talked about completely yet. I've got Jordan Whittington at number five. I've got Tyler Owens at number six. Whittington is, he's pound for pound as good of a football player as anybody we've talked about. And I'm excited to see him this year, almost as much as any player that Texas has recruited in a while. Texas is going to play him at running back. They're going to move him around in a way that's befitting of his skill set. He kind of reminds, he's like a poor man's little Jordan Humphrey in a way, and that, you know, when little Jordan showed up, he was just big. Like, little Jordan's tall. So when you say poor man's, it's not ability, it's size. Like, Whittington's not as big as little Jordan was, but, you know, you look at little Jordan and you go, well, he played some quarterback, he played some running back, we think he should be wide receiver, you're lining him up in the slot. Like, there's a lot of things that you could do with him, and I think Jordan Whittington brings that type of versatility, even though his skill set is slightly different, and he doesn't come in the same height, weight, speed, quickness package. Like, they are different players, but they have so much versatility that, for me, it's easy to see that Whittington could come in and very quickly do a number of things for this Texas team. I think if you're looking at players going into 2019 that have a chance to be Big 12 Freshman of the Year, on the offensive side of the ball, for me, it's Whittington all day long for Texas. And then you look at Oklahoma, knowing who they have to replace at wide receiver, you have to feel like one of or both of Bridges and Weiss will compete, I think, with Whittington for Big 12 Player of the Year honors. Which, again, like, you know, if you want a prediction early on, how about that one? I think Marcel Brooks, I think he's a five-star talent. I understand. I have him at eight. I have him with a high four-star grade. If someone wants to say that they think his problematic issues make him a guy that you personally wouldn't put in the top 10, I totally understand. But he was so good in the National All-American Game workouts and practices that I couldn't leave him outside the top 10. Like, he could be a first-round pick in 3 years, and I'm not going to look back and say, well, I just ignored all that talent because I didn't think he would stay in school. Like, I'm just not going to do that. I mentioned Tyler Johnson. He's at nine. The number one tight end in the state. And this one is such a fascinating one for me. When I first watched film of Baylor Cup, the tight end from Brock, 6'6", 248, I was not completely blown away. I might have had some confirmation bias, and then I was like, who in the hell is he even playing? Is it Brock? No kid with that profile has ever been a five-star guy and succeeded. Or even in that, like, he's got some concerns that I think, you know, there's some boxes in the concern department, and a lot of it just comes from, like, his profile just doesn't match a lot of profiles of players that have gone on to become big-time players. It's not to say that he won't. It's just to say that every time, the majority of times, the recruiting services of the world have dipped into players with profiles similar to Baylor Cup at similar type programs as Brock, those players bust out at a super high rate. So I was a little jaded. I'm watching this. I'm like, what's the fuss? I'm watching a couple of games and I'm like, okay, he's pretty damn good, but who's he playing? And then I just kept watching and I kept watching and I kept watching and I kept watching. I think I spent an hour watching Baylor Cup, and I just, the more I watched, the more I liked him. The more that I stopped worrying about the fact that he was at Brock, Texas, at Brock High School, and the more I started focusing on the fact that this guy's kind of a freak, man. He is legit 6'6", nearly 250, and he can move. And he can catch the ball, and he's physical, and like he plays football. Like, who knows? Maybe he's a big old pansy when he gets to college. And I've seen it before. I remember. Oh, it's like going back 20 years. I think it was. Forgive me for, you know what? I won't even say a name. There was a former number one tight end in the state. because I don't want to put the dude on blast. It's been 20 years, and like I don't want him to hear, like, hey, did you hear what Ketch said about you on on a podcast? No, I don't want to deal with that. There was a guy way back in the beginning of the Mac Brown era who was, and plus this is a secondhand story. I heard this from another player. He was a true freshman. He just showed up. He was the number one tight end prospect in the state the year that he signed. And everybody thought for sure that dude would come in and kick ass because he was an ass kicker. And it would just transfer from college to the pros. And when he showed up for college, that is not what happened. In fact, he was dismayed at how physical it was upon enrolling from high school to college. And his teammates thought that... Sorry about that. It's weird when your iPhone calls your computer. And someone from Gerald just called me. Sorry, person from Gerald, whomever you might be. I have to get back with you. So... it still weirds me. I don't even have my phone near me. It's just weird that my computer I can use as a phone. it's still kind of a revolutionary thing for me. Where was I? Oh, I was talking about Baylor Cup. Yeah. So look, and the kid that I'm talking about played big time Texas high school football. So you just never know. But the more I watch a Baylor Cup, the less I'm concerned that, man, when he gets to college, he's going to be a big old pussy. Like, I don't see that. I think he's going to be all right. And honestly, that's what you worry about with kids from those little towns, that they are so used. I shouldn't even call them kitty cats, but I shouldn't. The truth of the matter is, man, there's just a light years difference between going from a very small Texas high school football program to a big time program. The speed, the size and the speed, the quickness, the size and the speed and the quickness and the, like, all of it. You know, like, imagine being 6 foot tall, which, you know, is kind of an average height. But imagine in a world where when you went to the park to play basketball, the only people in the world for you to play basketball against were 5 feet tall. You're like, man, I'm good at basketball. I'm the first one picked every time we do pickup games. I am really, really good. Because the only thing that you've ever known is playing against these 5 foot dudes. Then you're 6 foot. Suddenly you start playing with a bunch of other 6 footers. And the post up game's not like it was. Like, not to say that you can't post up on dudes. But suddenly you're facing guys with equal ability, equal size. And like, it takes some adjustment to get used to that a lot of times. And a lot of times that adjustment swallows a kid up. Because we now live in this age where, you know, kids are transferring after a year or a two at the most if things haven't immediately clicked. And I just look at so many of these guys as, you're a 2 or 3 year project. There's nothing wrong with that. Keep your head down. And if you give yourself the time to develop in 2 or 3 years, I think you're going to be ass kicking. And a lot of these guys give up too soon. And when they don't hold the rope, to steal a Dennis Franchione-ism, you end up with some trouble. Other guys that finish outside of the top 10, that were really good. You know, like, I tried to put Damani Richardson, the kid from Waxahachie, the safety. There was nobody inside the top 10 other than Marcel Brooks that I was willing to drop out for Damani Richardson. But in the end, I decided I needed to have Marcel Brooks in a top 10 more than I needed to have Damani Richardson in. Richardson's at 11. Brooks is at 8. I spent way too much time thinking about both of those two guys side by side. Because in the end, it is very trivial. What I've learned in 20 years, nobody will care whether or not I had 1-8 or 1-11. If you have one ranked high and it pans out, you did good. You know, I mean... I think I had Luke Jokel ranked as the number 4 player in the class of 2010. I should have had him higher, but you couldn't say that I was, like, I had a 5-star grade on him. So, you know, you could only be, I think the probably the most damning, like, trivial slight of difference that I regret the most is in 2000, I ranked BJ Johnson number one and I ranked Roy Williams number two. And for 20 years, I've regretted that. Almost immediately, almost. Cause look, you know what it was? Confirmation bias can be a bitch. Cause I went and saw BJ Johnson play three times in person during his senior year. I didn't see Roy play in person once. And BJ was a god as a high school football receiver. He was so good. So good. And he ended up having a really good Texas, like really good. I mean, even now, it's been 15 years since he played. He's still a top seven all-time receiver in terms of, I think, receptions and yards. I mean, he had a really good college career. Roy Williams was a different animal. I had Roy Williams ranked two. And to this day, I want to slap myself in the face for only having him at two. By the way, I've never told this story, so I'll tell it in a podcast. Back in the day when I found myself at a gentleman's establishment on North Lamar on the night that Roy Williams, the Saturday of Roy Williams taking his official visit at Texas. Don't be mad at me. I was legal. That was 19 December of 1999. So I'm 23 years old. I'm completely within my right to be at the strip club. I was. I didn't have VIP. I actually might have been sitting in the VIP section. Back then, it was pretty standard like procedure that the players would take the other players to the Yellow Rose. Like, that's just something that they did on Saturday nights. And on this particular Saturday night, I happened to be in there, and I saw Roy Williams in the Yellow Rose on the night of his official visit, or the Saturday of his official visit. And the only reason why I bring this up is because Roy got a lap dance, and I was about 50 feet away, but I have never, I try to put myself in Roy Williams' shoes, you know, 17-year-old kid from West Texas back in the day when West Texas really meant being from someplace else. I'm sure it still does, but 1999, like, that's not too far. Like, you know, he's from like Friday Night Lights background where, you know, you didn't just, let me tell you what you didn't do. You didn't show up at a strip club and have like a white dancer just climb on top of you. But it happened on his official visit. And the look of sheer horror is the only reason why I remember this story. It's the only reason. I remember this story because the sheer look of horror on his face while all of the other players like pointed and laughed while he freaked out. It was, it's been 20 years. Not quite. Like 19 years and some change. That memory hasn't gone away from me. And you know what? On that note, I will wrap up today's podcast. It's almost exclusively recruiting ranking related. I'll do another one of these maybe tomorrow on National Signing Day, where we will get into some bigger picture conversation of the day and the Big 12 and the things like that. But for now, I'll leave on that story. You guys have a good rest of the day.